kind of crazy, really. And then sometimes you can say what you take. So what happens to a female? A female might be born with more testosterone in her. So is that illegal? So what happens when a man's got more testosterone than other men? Do we have a limit for men as well? So we can't just have a limit for women and not have a limit for men. So you got a bit of, because it's an equal role now. So sometimes I don't really understand the rules and so forth.
Hello and welcome to another edition of The Late Fitness Test. I'm your host, Stel, and I'm joined once again by Ben Denry and Johnny Wilson. Mr. Denry, how is one?
I'm very good, my friend. How the devil are you?
Yeah, very good. It seems like it's been forever since we last spoke.
Do you think?
No.
Yeah, all these days and weeks are just blurring into one. Honestly, mate, it just seems like it's incessant.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm looking forward to the end of the season.
You know what they say, absence make the heart grow fonder, doesn't it? And I spoke to you on Wednesday, wasn't it? So, yeah. Oh, well.
Yeah, well. It is, mate, yes. They're coming thick and fast.
There you go.
Thick and fast.
There you go. And joining us again, Johnny Wilson, Mr. Superman.
Hi, how are you guys? I'm phoning from Cork. I'm phoning from where I grew up in Ireland. I missed my flight last night, if I'm honest, so thank you very much, Aer Lingus, you fuckers. So to be fair, it was my own fault, I got the wrong train, but whatever. And so I'm back to Cork now this weekend, so ringing from our podcasting from Ireland, so this is a new and a first for me, so I'm really looking forward to this one.
Great stuff. Well, we have a fantastic guest, as ever, on the Late Fitness Test. It's none other, drum roll please, none other than Dalton Grant. Dalton, welcome to the show. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing fine. Who's Dalton Grant, by the way? I can't recall.
Some athlete, you know, quite popular, you know. I think he's like mid-20s at the moment. Isn't he mid-20s?
Wow, yeah, I'm liking that, yeah. Yeah, no, it's great. I'm in England, obviously, you know. Essex part of the world, and yeah, and looking forward to the show today with Ben and Johnny.
It's great.
Should be a cracker.
Great to have you on, mate. Well, I'll tell you what, just for the benefit of our listeners who don't know who you are, shame on them, give us a quick little bio about what you've done and your achievements.
Well, okay, what can I say? Well, I'm high jumper, formed by event. My sport was athletics. I did high jump as former captain of the British team. I've got a world record for opening height. So in 1997 in the World Championships, I started at 2 meters 32. And then, I was a board director of London 2012. So as part of the delegation, we actually brought the Olympics to London. So that is me, all in one, and a three-time Olympian. That's it.
That's well, I think you're a little bit more than that, Dalton. You know, I mean, your list of achievements are just incredible. I mean, going from European Junior Championships to Commonwealth Games to World Championships to Indoor Championships to European Championships. I mean, and then spanning over, you know, almost three decades,
yeah.
Really. Like, you know,
whoa, you're giving away too much.
I said he was 25.
Yeah, I'm 25, remember, not 53. Come on, not call out my age.
I remember in 1994, I was like kind of in a village in Cork, and you were winning the European Indoor Championships in Paris and France.
That's right, wow. Well, you pulled it out, well done, yeah. I remember I was up against it. Funny for that competition, you know, it's, I tweaked my ankle in the qualifying, and I remember going out, and I was worrying about my ankle, and I was on the coach going into the stadium with Colin, and he said, "What's the matter? You seem a bit agitated." I said, "Yeah, I mean, I'm in good shape and so forth, and but I tweaked my ankle." So he goes, "What are you going to do?" Because I don't know. He says, "Well, you just got to go for it. If it goes, it goes." So it was just that little thing at that time. It's funny, and I remember I was struggling because I was getting third and second attempts to clear it, and I remember I had two failures at 2 meters 35, and I had to move it up because the French guy on his own so broke his national record 3 times. My last time in attempt, I remember I cleared 2:37, which was, you know, my personal best on that day.
I mean, you hadn't cleared 2:37 before that, and I think you know, as in you'd had to go back to 1991, which is like 3 years before that, when you were in the World Championships in Tokyo, and you cleared 236 that time, didn't you? And but I don't think you were, you know, you had some 230s, you know, early 230s, but that 237 was a standout for you. And you know, it's incredible the fact that you were. You didn't feel at your best that time as well, so it's, you know.
No, but you know, that's the kind of thing about in life now, when I see people, when I see these up-and-coming athletes, you know, moaning about not being ready and so forth. But I can tell you, you're always going to have a niggle and problems, but even though we had our problems, we still performed. So it's no excuse. Because I remember, for instance, one of the European Cup championships we had, Linford Christian, his mum passed away in that time, and he was going to fly back. He says, no, the way he done, he carried on because he can't do any difference. And he ran, and he won the tournament, and then went home, you know, obviously, you know, because his mum passed away. And that's the kind of things that the show has to go on. Roger Black, you know, for 2 years, he was out with his ankle. When he come back in that one season, 1996, he got the silver medal. So it's very hard when I see people. You have to go for it. And I just think of where I came back, grew up from. Hackney is my part of the world, or it's my part of London, and you know, it's all about a choice what you want to do in life. And when I think of what sport has done for me traveling the world and me keeping my feet on the ground, I know it has changed my life and it's given me that discipline. And then I learned is how to execute under pressure, because there's been pressure all the way.
Well, you see these one-hit wonders and so on and so forth, but you went to three Olympic Games. So you were in South Korea in 1988, and that's then right. You were in Barcelona in 92, and then 96, then you were in Atlanta, weren't you?
That's right,
It's, you know, to be able to maintain that type of level of competition and really kind of striving to be the best, you know, that's when you can give yourself a pat on the back. I mean, obviously,
I was very fortunate because, you know, the hardest thing for me really was I was the first world-class high jumper, I would say, in Great Britain. And mainly we didn't have that focus. The high jump wasn't that strong. We had one guy who was really decent from earlier, Jeff Parsons, but he wasn't that consistent jumping over 230s. So what I did, I would say, Mikey, was hanging around the right people, like the Colin Jacksons and the you know, the John Ridgens at that time and the Daley Thompsons. And I would say it's work ethic. The most important thing is fitness. I'm a natural jumper. I never really worried about jumping, but it was about my fitness to that level. And I think sometimes when you really train hard and you go into yourself, that's when it takes you on a level, kind of like a spiritual level. And why I say that, I mean, I used to, you know, for a period of 3 months, knock out like 1,000 sit-ups a day. And like, I mean, I was very strong. I used to squat quarter squats. It's totally different, over 300 kgs. So when you kind of hit these marks, it takes you to a different level. And I think in our generation, we had to learn by doing. But nowadays, there's a lot of technology out there and people saying, oh, you can't overtrain because you're in the red zone and so forth. But surely you have to overtrain to improve. You've got to do something what you've never done before to improve. You can't undertrain to improve. You don't train less. And I think people ain't that open of listening and finding out what a method someone does and learning it from them. That's what I did. I spied on what other people was doing and found out. And then I tweaked it into the way I did. And that's what made me that jumper.
So there's a scientific term for that. And it's called epigenetics. So,
right.
And epigenetics means that you can actually change the expression of your DNA within your lifetime. And you can do that through nature and nurture. So nature being what you're born with, and then nurture being specified training. So you train for power, then you can become more powerful and you can express more the genes that are, you know, related towards being faster or being more powerful or being able to jump higher. You're going to be able to do it.
But then the key, what I rely on, is using it together. So a lot of people don't know when you saw the rugby change in different sports. So what I done, I got fit and jumped naturally. So I took my training and said, I wonder what I can do if I can help other people when I retired. I took a badminton player from 50th to 19th in the world, going to the Commonwealth Games and winning 2 bronze medals, Elizabeth Can. You know, I went into different sport boxers who, you know, is looked after by Frank Warren, and I got them more powerful and they were hurting their wrists. And the training partners can feel it in the power of their punch. So, because in athletics, it's always recorded. It's the distance, It's the height, you know, and it's the speed that you record consistently, what you go to that time where you need to do. So what I've done to go into other sports, I did athletics because I said, you got high jump, long jump, pole vault, all the different disciplines, and we all run and do plyometric bounding. But the only thing which is different is the technical side. So I looked at different things which in different sport and brought it together, and that's what I did it. So how I brought athleticism, and then the key really is about your mindset. You don't need to be a confident person. You just need to be confident in what you do.
Yeah, very, very, very true. Very true. And fascinating, by the way.
Okay, cheers.
Dalton, I know you have a vested interest in football. What are you doing with yourself right now? Because I believe you're involved in the game in some capacity.
Yeah, well, I went in because, like I said, I always wanted to be a footballer, but my talent lied in jumping. So, you know, great for my teacher twisting my arm at the end of football season. I played for my district and so forth. And a lot of my friends went on to good things like Jimmy Carter and so forth. He would play at Liverpool, Millwall, and
Arsenal.
You know, I think he first had his scholarship, yeah, in Arsenal as well. So for me, really, I just kind of went into the sport, like I said, and once I finished and learned how the competitive side and so forth, I went into different sports. So I'm back in the love of my sport, which is football, and helping. So it really is just, if a person is technically good, how do you improve them? The technique only gets you so far. You need to be strong, so you need strength. So it's just getting strong in those areas. So it's bringing it in the area, in that area. And I worked with a guy called Mathias Fanimont. I worked with him for a year. He was at West Ham from the age from 17 to 19. No, from 7 to 19, sorry. And from 17 to 19, he was captain of England, captain over the likes of Sterling. So these are the kind of things where it's proven results. Can athleticism improve someone? You know, yes, it can. Because I've worked with the likes of Mathias and turned his career around. And by that, quite a few players have been coming to me. I mean, last season I did Rian Brewster, who's at Liverpool, and did, I call it a pre-season before he goes into pre-season. And he's improved. And Klotz even said that he was like, he's a new signing. And the greatest thing for me when I knew I arrived is because Gilberto Silva gave me a call and called me up. And I've been working with his son. So it's nice when you get calibre of people like that that you're speaking to and tapping to you for your services.
Absolutely, mate. Absolutely. And long may it continue, because I hear you're doing some great work.
Yeah, I mean, for me, yeah, I want to get my teeth stuck into it. And it's just really giving people the opportunity, because I'm a winner and I like to give people the opportunity. And what I mean, if you're in a club, for instance, and you get relief, it's very hard because you're not playing with the level of players and you're not getting the training. Because, you know, you set up, you train 5 days a week, and if you go into non-league, you're going to play 2 days a week, and you're lucky and something's not consistent. So what I bring is that consistency of outside, that professional setup outside the system, because that's what I like, because I can do the things what I've known, which is proven. I wouldn't want to go and study on something and master something that I don't know, because I can only know by a proven result. This is what made me jump high. This is what took this badminton player, you know, to win bronze medal. This is what got this football. Now, I could always tell when they're doing well is the feedback from clubs. I mean, I'm coaching a young girl as well at the age of 12 called Layla, and she's the only person who can actually, a young girl playing with the boys, you know. So I double at all different ages, and it's just really my training kind of points out what did that person need if they can handle their body weight, their agility, you know, mobility, like I was saying, and speed as well. And then the technical aspect of it. Because if they don't know the technical aspect of what they need to do, it can hurt themselves. Because technique don't mean that you can be the best work in the world. It just means that it's going to make you efficient and prevent you from getting injuries.
Brilliant stuff. Brilliant. Right. Shall we talk injuries, Ben?
We can't do, mate. Always happy to talk injuries, you know, mate.
Excellent.
Come on, Ben.
Excellent. Right, before we go into that, Johnny, can you say, fuck me, you can see his fucking bone?
Excuse me?
I said, can you say, fuck me, you can see his fucking bone?
It's lost on him.
I won't know this one now. What's after happening now?
Just say it.
Fuck me, you can see his fucking bone.
That's exactly what Shane Long said when he saw James Ward-Prowse's injury.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Really? Was it that bad?
Mm-hmm. Ben, come on. It was in the FA Cup game against Spurs, wasn't it?
Oh. Was it that bad? It certainly looked that bad initially. So to give you a little bit of background, James Ward-Prowse had an accidental collision with Ryan Sessegnon. His knee caught the bottom, the sole of his foot, and his stud effectively sort of sliced through his leg, and quite a deep laceration there. And quite rightly, as you've more pointed out, you could actually see the bone. Now, initial concerns when he was taken off, obviously that there could be any structural damage, maybe some bone, the ligaments. But fortunately, the initial prognosis post-match, when Ralph Hasselhüttl spoke to the press, indicated that it was just a very deep cut and there didn't appear to be anything more sinister with regards to the injury at that point. Now, this was on Wednesday evening, late Wednesday night. And with Southampton not playing again until next weekend against Burnley, there's still hope that he could actually make that fixture in game week 26.
So, that's actually sooner than what I thought he'd be returning.
Well, yeah, I mean...
It
was Ward-Prowse caught the sole of Sessegnon's boot.
Okay, so right.
Obviously, the stud configuration, whatever he was wearing, he sort of cleared the ball, and as the momentum took him into that, and it's caught his knee, and it's actually just sliced through the skin straight down to the bone. But fortunately, it looks as if it's missed, all ligaments and everything like that, and it just literally is a cut, which, you know, I suppose, and Johnny may correct me if that is the case, then infection is probably the biggest cause of concern at this point. If we can avoid that and keep the wound clear, although as unlikely as it seemed on Wednesday night, you know, next weekend might be a strong possibility for a return to play.
The problem you'll have there will be how you manage the wound. So they'll have to go to a tissue viability specialist. And a tissue viability specialist... So it's different. If you're a Joe Soap, you'll just get a stitch on that. And you'll be told, you know, in 12 days' time, we'll take the stitches out and so on and so forth. Just keep it clean. If you feel unwell, or you feel sick, or you're not really, you know, not feeling yourself, then you need to go to A&E because we might have a wound infection. However, with a professional footballer, the issue is... you don't want the wound to reopen. So it's not in a great area. It's just below the knee. It's on the tibial plateau, so he might be a little bit lucky. But in any structure in the body where it bends, you're going to have pulling and tugging. So even if the stitches are removed, you're going to have pulling and tugging on the actual scar itself. And at 10 or 12 days' time, maybe the cells are a little bit immature to be able to take that type of tensioning. And then, you know, psychologically, is he going to be happy to go out into that arena, knowing that he's got a wound and that it's, you know, a turn here or a kick there or, you know, a push here, and then it might reopen again and then he's out for another length of time. So these are the ones that I talk to managers about, and they say, well, it's only a cut. I'm thinking, I know it seems like it's only a cut. However, they might, you know, carry a longer term of absenteeism than one would initially think. So
it's great that you said that, because, you know, the funny thing is it goes down to the manager, sometimes the player, because, you know, from my experience in athletics, I know that a lot of people who have serious injuries, they play it. Sometimes the athletes just want to go out there, and some athletes don't want to go out there. So it all depends on the person, really.
Yeah.
To play with that kind of injury, you know? Yeah.
Absolutely.
Brilliant.
Yeah, I think certainly what we know of Ward-Prowse, he is a player that the Saints, he will want to be out on that pitch. Yeah. He always gives it all for his club. You know, he's a high-profile, high-status player. And Saints are still hovering quite precariously above that drop zone. Burnley will be a big game, so, you know, undoubtedly, you know, he's one that might be have to, you know, a decision maybe taken out of his hands and held back a little bit.
Well, yeah. We know from dead balls how fantastic he is, set pieces, penalties, you name it. There you go.
It's funny when you're saying that. It's going to be great because, like you're saying, adrenaline into your passion. Sometimes when even things happen to you, and I've seen people cut out with a pull of hamstring and through passion, desire, still carry on, and you wouldn't believe that they actually damaged their hamstring. So it's amazing when things really mean something to you, what one can do, how strong the mind is.
That's correct, mate.
There's been instances in recent times in the Premier League, one or two players suffered a ruptured ACL and they've tried to play on through that for the next sort of 5 to 10 minutes, and then literally the legs buckling underneath them, and it's just wow, somebody make that decision and bring them off.
I'm going to detour the audience here for a moment, but I think they'll all appreciate this, right? So there's a book called The Rise of the Superman, and they talk about the incredible feats that athletes have done over the last 100 years, let's say, right? Since they've been recording these type of feats. And there's a guy, and I'm into skateboarding, so there's a guy called Danny Way, and he's like fucking, one of the godfathers of skateboarding. And this guy, right, he's gone out to the Great Wall of China, and he went to clear the Great Wall of China. So they had to build a huge ramp on either side. So he's gone to jump the Great Wall of China. Huge jump, right? So
do you know how high that wall is? I've been to China in 1986. You should. I want to know that ramp. That is a ramp. It's more than, I think that it's got a little bigger than Evel Knievel's ramp.
I tell you what, it's a big wall, that one, Dalton.
I'm telling you, a very, very big wall. It's the biggest wall on the planet, let's be honest. And the longest.
It's a big one, So, look, we're all agreed it's a big wall, right?
Yeah.
And, so they've built a ramp on one side of it and built a ramp on the other side. So you're looking at a tree, I think it was something like a 100-foot, gap that he had to make, and he was 200 feet up and all that. So, you can imagine that this was the biggest story back in the 90s, right? And this guy is about to jump the Great Wall of China. So they're putting up the scaffolding. They're not sure about the ramps. Will he get there and so on and so forth? So he goes, do you know what? I need to check this out. So without even thinking, the ramps weren't even built properly, right? He just got his skateboard and then absolutely took off, went up into the air. He's 100-150 foot up in the air. He is literally cruising like Superman through the air and looking to hit the other side, the other ramp on the other side of the Great Wall of China. Now, sickeningly, and you can look at this on YouTube, right? You'll see this on YouTube. He hit the edge of the ramp on the other side and dislocated his ankle in 6 places. This is the day before he was to do his official attempt on jumping the Great Wall of China, okay? So you can imagine they have spent, hundreds of thousands of dollars putting the ramps together. They've had all the TV crews and all that. The ambulance came straight away. They brought him to the hospital. They needed to operate there and then. And he said to the surgeon, and he said, listen, you just need to put me in a plaster Paris right now, because if you don't do that, I'm not going to be able to jump tomorrow. The guy couldn't walk. His ankle was like an elephant the next day. And you can see it on YouTube, right? He has limped his way 200 feet up to the ramp, not able to stand on his foot, put both feet on the skateboard, and cleared the Great Wall of China with a fractured, dislocated ankle in 5 places. Not only did he clear it on the first occasion, just to make sure that he did it right, he did it 3 more times after that, and then had surgery on his ankle because he didn't want to let down the world. And that is the greatest skateboarder that has ever lived, Danny Way. And I hope the audience and the listeners will appreciate that story. And the book is called The Rise of the Superman. And, oh, man, I've missed so many turns off the M1 just listening on Audible to The Rise of the Superman. It is phenomenal. They go into the Hour of Power. There's some crazy stories in there. So it is mind over matter, And... the mind is incredible, and we don't exercise.
He must have a serious pain threshold. I tell you, he was hyped up on morphine or something.
It was just mind over. It was like the mind takes over. There are things.
Yeah, but I mean, in the game you can do it, but what you said, he'd done it the day before. And normally, is that one of these knocks and the bruises come out? Yeah, so he will feel it. It's like sometimes if you're playing football, I don't know if you know that, and your ankle's falling, you know when you undo your lace, your ankle's going to blow like a balloon. It's one of those ones, you know. And
I played at a very high level, Dalton, at the Dog and Duck.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? We had a great battle one day against the White Lion. You probably remember me. You know, great player.
Well,
stick to the black stuff, Johnny.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of Superman, Adama Traore, he's picked up an injury, hasn't he? A shoulder injury, Ben.
A couple of injuries, in actual fact. Yeah, so just before Christmas against Tottenham, Traore went down and dislocated his shoulder. Unfortunately, at the time, he was patched up and it was popped back in on the pitch by the club doctor. Now, fast forward a month or so, and the same thing happened in a tussle with Harry Maguire. It looked a pretty innocuous challenge. He was holding him off. The ball went out of play and the camera sort of panned back and there was Traore down and his left shoulder popped out again. And that happened fairly early in the game. Club doctor back on and again they managed to pop that back in place. And he played through until around about the 75th minute where he picked up a calf problem. Now again, we haven't had a press conference ahead of Wolves game in game week 26. So we're working on Nuno Espirito Santo's comments initially after that game at Old Trafford, where he basically said, look, it's nothing too serious. We expect him to recover in time. But again, just as Dalton touched upon there, it's always the next sort of 24, 48, 72 hours after the event,
yeah.
You know, where the adrenaline's out of the system, you're out in the limelight, right. it's the cool light of day. And I suspect, you know, with it being such a, you know, his second dislocation within such a short period of time, it may be a case of, you know, Traore can be patched up maybe until the end of the season.
Reminds me of Brian Robson, doesn't he? Remember?
But there may be a point where, you know, the laxity in the ligaments around that shoulder girdle and joint, that he may need surgery in the summer. Yeah. And that would probably be a route, I suspect, that the club may need to go down at some point.
Yeah.
I think that's a fair comment, I would say, in the fact of Matt Perry is the most experienced doctor in the Premier League, for sure.
It was actually Matt who was on doing the pitch side as well. He was name checked.
You need to get them all. He might go over to Germany, because I remember there's a great doctor as well who's a doctor at Bayern Munich, guy called Dr. Moller Wolfhard. Dr. Müller-Wohlfahrt, and he was a doctor for the national team and for Bayern Munich football team. He's based in Munich.
Yeah.
So he came over, he's done some work. So a lot of the top guys, I met him actually many years ago when I had an injury and so forth, and I used to go over there. And the way they treat you is totally different. I mean, it's 3 years ago when Ballack was playing for Chelsea and he had an ankle problem. And I remember he was going to get surgeries over here, but what he did, he went back over to this guy, manipulated it, and he did need surgery. But he's like the hand of God, so most of the top people around the world would know him. He cheated the likes of Nadal, everybody, like Usain Bolt, from Daley Thompson, from, you know, Colin Jackson. He's all that sportsman from all around the world. Boris Becker, a guy called Dr. Willem Wolfhard.
Yeah. So was he one of your go-to guys then, Dalton?
Yeah, he was. Because
the athletics team?
No, before, because to be honest, they were... It was out of scratch in the 80s, some of them. I mean, to be honest, they didn't really know what they were doing. It's like the physios then just come in on a trip. If you ask them to wrap your ankle, they wouldn't really up to scratch. So all of us went away. So we were the ones who start kind of investing with athletes abroad. I mean, not calling our names, at one time Linford Christie kind of pulled his hamstring and they checked his hamstring and they said, oh, you're all right. Just go upstairs and have a hot chocolate and you'll be fine. So it changed now. It's a lot professional now, because in the old days we didn't know, because you know back then it was all right, put a cortisone in it. I mean, people were having about 8 to 10 cortisones in the leg, and they banned that because, you know, steroid based. That's what ruined a lot of people now. you know, everybody wants to be safe and go down the homeopathic route. And like when you have an injury, sometimes it's really funny. Depends. That's why I said it's individual. You might know that you want to take time out, so you just try to work around it. Unless it really gets bad, and if you're going to hold out for the whole season, then you hold it out. You just have to know how to warm up around it, really, and you can survive, really. It depends on the injury, really. I mean, and I don't really call it injury because you still can perform at a higher level. I call it a niggle.
I mean, he's a very controversial character in the world of sport and exercise medicine. I think he was sacked by Bayern Munich, and then he was reappointed, and he's got his intravenous injections.
Was that the falling out with Pep?
Yeah, definitely, because as you've seen about
it was.
He's an homeopathic guy, he is. And really, he's spiritual. It's really funny the way he goes around and can feel knots and that, and it is. He is that kind of person, which it's like the nutty professor, but I understand. I think really, in life, everybody's got a gift. Whether it's, you know, football, physios, you know, everybody, coaches, there's something about you that you just can communicate. And I think it's that trust that you have in someone, whoever there is. Even if they don't know anything about football, if you trust that person, you believe in that person, you still could be the best player in the world. Well, I don't know who it is.
You look at Michael Owen now, Dalton, right? And he goes on Sky Sports, and he is extremely critical of the Liverpool sports medicine department for the way they treated him because of his hamstring issues. So he said he was never the same player ever after he had his hamstring issues, his recurrent hamstring issues, and that was because of the way Liverpool treated him. However, what a lot of people fail to realise is that he was farmed out to Wolfhard Muller, and he was the guy who was given all the credit at the time on the papers of getting Michael Owen back in time to play for Euro 2000.
Yes.
And he was the one who helped save Owen's Liverpool and England career. Now, he then went on to operate on Star, inject Steven Gerrard when he had these horrendous groin issues. I'm sure probably Ben has got the date for that. So, you know, like we all look back on things with kind of a little bit of rose-tinted glasses and so on and so forth. And I love the pioneers. I love the leading lights. And for me, he's a great guy, you know. But I think that, you know, when you look back on it, this has been very much a learning era. You know, the 70s, 80s, 90s, 2000s, and so on.
Yeah, definitely.
And I said this last week, you know, to Aidan Sires. I said, look, I said, the moment an injection comes out, you're injecting an athlete, I'm walking away because I'm thinking, this is just wrong. I know of no...
Yeah, I understand what you're saying, but it all depends on what it is. I think if anything illegal, and that's it. But it depends if you eat food, you take creatine. So it's a thin line. As long as you're doing it within the rules, I think. Because what do I do? It's like, you know, it's really funny. Like, even when you can't have nightmares. So if I had a cold and Lemsip, I can't take these things. And it's not even what you're taking it from, because it's got ephedrine based in. So it's kind of crazy, really. And then sometimes you can say what you take. So what happens to a female? A female might be born with more testosterone in her. So is that illegal? So what happens when a man's got more testosterone than other men? Do we have a limit for men as well? So we can't just have a limit for women and not have a limit for men. So you've got to put on, because it's equal role now. So sometimes I don't really understand the rules and so forth. And then when we look back in, Edward Moses just came out and said that, you know, most of these people were taking drugs back in the 80s, and we know, I don't want to say what countries, but is it only the Russians? No, it's not just the Russians. In me, I've had a bad experience, so I'm a worry about putting things in my body, and I don't really worry about being out of control. But there's some people, when you look at them, it's that desire to be the best in the world, they would do anything.
Yeah,
so it's a thin line.
If you take it back from a step back from the drugs, Dalton, right? So let's deal with Muller Wolfhard here. I mean, he was injecting a honey solution, a type of paracetamol, you know, and then packaging it as, you know, well, I'm unsure how he would have packaged it to the player, you know, and then players talk, don't they? Obviously, Owen talked to Stephen Gerrard. Stephen Gerrard talked to Harry Kewell, Darren Goffin. Yeah. I'm going here. You know, everybody, Will Green would have thinking, I need to make the 2003 World Cup because we're going to, you know, hopefully we've got a chance to win it. And then you're doing anything you possibly can do. You're you know, as in, you're at the mercy and you go to
yeah, but don't forget, that's his method, though. That's his method of recovering and is whether you abide by it. It's like if you might go to someone with a different training program that we might say is crazy, where it's plyometrics or it's weight-based or it's circuit-based. So that's his method. His method is using homeopathic, I think it was honey, what you're saying, magnesium, that loosens the muscle and so forth. I mean, if it's legal, you shouldn't do it. Is it legal what he's doing, or is it illegal what he's doing? And if you're going to go and we can read out the names of the players that we're talking about, look at the caliber of players that went across the sports.
Yeah, but to be fair, right, you know, judging a person's credentials on the caliber of person that they've or athlete that they've treated is expertism by association. So it's a case of, you know, one person speaks to one person, speaks to one person, and all of a sudden that practitioner or that coach or whoever, then they get a name because, you know, there's a perceivement that they're very good because they treated Usain Bolt, because they treated Will Greenwood, because they treated Stephen Gerrard or Michael.
Yeah.
But that is, you know, as in, if you were to give me that as your resume, I would say, well, I need a little bit more than that.
Yeah, but he has, because I've been in there with you and Thomas, and he's helped me back when I had a groin strain. So yeah, I went in there, and I'm not telling you something what I think or through something. I'm talking about through physical experience that I've went through. And the funny thing that you said that, it's just like in football now, where, you know, I see they know that you've got to be fit as an athlete. They're taking all these people in sport, but where did they learn it from? They're studying. Why wouldn't you go to an athlete and say, okay, that's a Jonathan Edwards program, that's a Roger Black program, that's a Danny. Why are you taking programs from people and wondering why they're getting injured? They don't know what they're doing.
This is
the biggest problem. So I went into Fulham, and I always see, and when they see me do it, and it's years of what you know what I've done, they look at me doing it so easy, and they think they can do it. We don't need to employ me. We need a week. A week? That's over 20-odd years of training and understanding the body. And if I went in and I told you now, I work with it, I can reel out a few athletes. But the problem is now, when you get to these, let's say, sports scientists or these athletic coaches in there now who study there, they get scared of you. They want to take your knowledge,
Dalton,
and
I agree with you, right? I agree with what you're saying, because you've got a history of training. You know, you said earlier on this podcast that you trained harder than everybody. Muller Wohlfahrt is in a room, in a clinic, in a lab. He's got an injection in his hand. Come on.
Yeah.
There's a difference between what you do out in the field and what
But you see the difference with Muller.
You have an injection in your hand. The moment. And then you're injecting.
No, but you need to understand, though. I understand what you're saying, but remember.
Right. It's not
when he goes in. No, but you need to understand. It's like a doctor when he diagnoses you. He don't just inject you for that. He goes in and he might say your back is tight. So you need to release that. So this is what he puts into really. He don't just go in there and say, give you an injection. There's a reason.
I don't need an injection.
No, you don't, because maybe you're not training that hard. You're not training hard. You're not pushing your body to that extent. When you're an athlete, people think it's like at the gym.
If you train that hard, you don't need... That's not an excuse.
It depends on your body, your muscle size.
You can't come to me, Dalton, and say, I train that hard, I need an injection. And for me to...
No, I wouldn't say that. It's your muscle size. It's how someone helps it.
Because you can't say that, because it would be completely wrong. And to
no, I wouldn't say that.
Right, go on.
It's down to your body. That's what I said to you.
You're now using the argument that you're an athlete and I'm not. Therefore, you're...
No. It's an individual. It's a muscle type. Everybody's muscle type is different. No one says the same.
But not everybody gets an injection for that, do they?
Because they don't need to. It depends if it's... No, it depends on what he does. When you go for a treatment, and I mean, the athletes don't really know. If it's legal, that's what I'm saying. You go in there for a treatment. If it's a chiropractor, if it's an osteopath, if someone's going to put a laser in you. I mean, if you're saying that, well, why do people take creatine then? Creatine is illegal.
That's what I'm saying. No, that's what I'm saying.
If you're saying.
But you're arguing for the intervention. So I'm arguing against the intervention.
No, I'm not. Whatever it takes within the rules. If that's in the rules and it's okay. No, as anybody who's doing anything illegal, that's it.
Gents, I think this is an argument
I'm arguing against that.
I think this is an argument that can ramble on for
for a pretty long time. So shall we move swiftly on to something a bit more serious?
It's never an argument. It's a discussion. Because you know when you go through, it's a discussion, and I love this because I'm not scared. And not everybody. And I'm not saying, don't get me wrong, that because you're a top athlete you can coach. No, you can't. Prove that you can coach. Because you might, you know, you can't break it down. And this is what I'm saying. But I love this because it's very hard for me to judge someone and I'm not living their life, the pressures they're going through, their upbringing. What, I don't know. Okay. And you know, it's very hard when you're at that time and you've got a problem and your coach tells you to go here and this is the right person and this is what he's bringing to the table, then it's up to you. What are you going to say at that time? I'm injured. I want to get back. I want to get back for, you know, get ready to get a few jumps in before I go to Olympic Games. No, I'm not going to take an injection.
Okay. You shouldn't take the injection, Dyson. No.
All right.
That's your opinion.
Okay.
That's your opinion.
Okay. You gents. What about concussions then? Because there's a rule that's coming out next season in the Premier League, isn't there, Ben? About concussions and substitutions and...
Potentially. There's been a proposal put forward.
And this is something that FIFA Pro have also backed as well. Isn't that right?
Yeah. So basically, they're going to, or they're hoping that next season that they'll introduce this protocol, which will allow a temporary substitution. So those players who suffered head trauma, impact, head injuries, can effectively be taken off and fully assessed on the side of the pitch, which they say is around about 10 minutes. And during that interim period, you know, the team won't be punished. They can have 11 players on the pitch by introducing this temporary substitute. Players assessed independently. There'll be no affiliates of the club, so that, you know, they maintain that level of impartiality. And then after that 10-minute assessment has taken place, then obviously a decision will be made on whether they can A, return to the pitch, or B, you know, the withdrawn and the substitute therefore becomes a permanent part of the game.
Fair enough. Well, Dalton, are concussions frequent or common in athletics?
No, unless you're angry and you mess up and you start headbutting the wall. No,
then you go to the doctor and ask him to give you an injection,
you know,
right?
No, but you know the difference is, I think if it's in the rules and the rules says you shouldn't, but it's kind of hard because look at rugby. Because when I speak to a lot of my friends who play rugby, it depends on what you play, union or league. And you're getting, it's like fun getting concussion in rugby. But if you talk about boxing now, what hits your head harder? You headering the ball, someone punching your head. And what age are they boxing at? So it's kind of hard. So if they're going to ban that, then boxing should be changed as well. But then again, what do you do? It's a sport. It's a choice. And sometimes, you know, it might be your genetics in the sense that you could have problems, you know, you don't know. And then getting punched in the head or hitting the head, you don't even know when you're young, you might have fell over and banged your head and you've got to be careful. Because I know a few guys that it's detrimental to them if they work the head of the ball or do boxing. They can't do that.
Yeah, well, we've seen numerous head injuries in football, be it a clash of heads or someone just having the ball lashed at their head, so to speak. Johnny, what do you make of this rule change? Because I've always believed that the moment a player goes down with a head injury, regardless of whether it's serious or not, they need to go off. That's what I always believe.
I believe that as well. I totally agree.
Yeah, I mean, in professional football, and the decision to whether you're going to remain on the field either during a game or training is generally taken by the player. So if I go out and a player's injured or a player seems to have gone down with an injury, an assumed injury, I'll go out and I'll assess the player, have a look at the player, and then I'll ask the player, does he feel like he's able to continue or not? And if the player tells me he feels like, yeah, do you know what, I feel like I can run this off. I don't think it's a hamstring injury. I don't think I've, you know, my ankle's too bad. I don't think, my knee feels okay. I'm going to give it a go. Then they do. However, in the case of a head injury, I've got to assume that player is not able to make a reasonable decision. And therefore, the decision for return to play is taken away from the player and then I've got to assume responsibility for that. So if I think that, you know, he's not behaving the way he should normally behave, so maybe he's aggressive, maybe he's a little bit vacant, maybe he's just not himself, maybe his short-term memory isn't quite the way it is. So we've got these five questions that we ask, which are Maddox questions. And if he doesn't answer those right, so, you know, an example of those are, who are we playing today? What's the score? What half are we in? Who scored last? Who do we play last week? And so on and so forth. So there are examples of the questions that we would ask. Then we would look at his balance and so on and so forth. And I'm thinking, do you know what? This guy isn't quite right. He's telling me he's fine to play on. I'm the person who makes the decision and says, right, you come off there. There was a time...
But then you think that's a tough thing for you, though. So what happened to you if you done a Tyson Fury? Out spark Cole and gets up and ready to play. What are you going to say? No, no, you can't play.
Yeah, you have to.
But look at Tyson Fury, though. Look what he's done, though. That's what I'm saying. So it's kind of one of those things which is hard. I understand what you're saying, a whole, but I... So that means we should have just called it out because he was gone. And he came up and recovered in that time.
Well, see,
this
is
what I'd say is funny.
I mean, I know that back in, I think, 2014, 2015, there was a rule change where I think the club doctor had to decide if the player was capable of continuing, not the manager or the players or any of the coaches. So it was actually down to the club doctor. So I don't know if that law or rule stands.
Well, it's not the club doctor. It's a medical professional who's suitably qualified to make that decision. So you would have, you know, a first aid, an appropriate first aid qualification, that you had looked at concussion and how to recognize concussion, and if in doubt, sit them out. So that is.
But it's so funny when you say that, you know. And that's the rule, that's right, because I remember in our days when we was coming up and you had concussion, people just pull out the smelling salt and just put it with it, you're back, off you go. So it's really funny to now, how times change. I'm showing my age now, really, but which is the right thing, it should change.
Messaged Ben, this is a little bit off topic, but it's very similar, right? Just before I bring this topic up, my opinion is the rule change that comes in is, you know, adequate. I've obviously told a few of the anecdote stories that I've had in professional football where I've had to run after the referee to stop the game. Wow. Where a manager has pushed me off a player, put his hand in his mouth and got blood over his hand and pushed him back onto the field, and then I've had to drag the player back. I've had players who weren't concussed, but I assumed that they were concussed, you know, and then they went to the manager after the game. We had lost 1-0, and then the player's gone, I was fine, he should never took me off, and then the manager's fucking absolutely hammered me afterwards. However, there was a game last week where a player had gone down with an injury, Premier League player, and the physio has come out, right? And, you know, it looked like he'd opened up the medial aspect of his knee. So, you know, MCL or an ACL. And the physio's come out and he's checked the outside of his knee. And this is on Sky Sports. This is last week. And I remember messaging Ben, this is Friday last week, right? And I was like going, oh my God, what is going on here? The guy has tested the wrong ligament. And then he got the cold spray out of his bag and sprayed cold over his knee.
Wow.
And I just went, oh, I thought these days were gone in the 90s.
I know.
That happened on Sky Sports on Friday. Wow. Ben, I'll tell you, I sent him the message.
And
you
it know, wasn't a Bournemouth. Crazy. It wasn't the Bournemouth game, was it?
No, that guy isn't allowed to run out on the pitch. He's not good enough.
He's not fit enough.
he's not fit enough. He's too fat.
Johnny, he's a clown. Johnny, just going a little bit off subject here. We know about the CTE problems the NFL have had, and we saw what happened with Aaron Hernandez and whatnot. Is that a major concern for football teams within the UK?
Yeah, I mean the research that has come out now is damning. Okay, so repetitive stresses that of the older football, so when it was a bit heavier and so on and so forth, they're showing that what they're saying is that there's a correlation, and correlation doesn't mean causation. So that they're saying that there's an unusually high percentage of ex-professional footballers who are suffering from types of dementia, so vascular dementia and other types of dementia, and when they compare them to peers of their own age, and they're putting it down to, they're assuming that it's coming from, you know, concussive events during their playing career. So if, if they're recorded or not, in a lot of cases, you know, a lot of these concussive events are not recorded. And then they're putting it down to repetitive heading of the ball. And I don't know if any of you have headed the ball when the keeper's kicked it out of his hands and it's dropping down out of the sky, and it's a cold, cold November evening. You know, you're 3 minutes into the game and you've got to head this ball. It is not pleasant.
Centre half, yeah, Johnny, that was a, three, four, five, six times a game. That's
I mean, and there you go.
I'm a living example of what
I rest my case.
Well rested, I say.
Johnny was 6'2" when he started playing football.
Oh, yeah. I still, listen, my game was always on the ground, lad. Dog and duck. Number 10. I didn't have to rely on height. It was that good.
Well, most of the best players in the world ain't that tall, are they?
That's it. You know, look, absolutely. Oh,
no, leave it. Just leave it at there, man, Dalton.
I've got to encourage him, eh? No one else is, eh?
Everybody went quiet there, Dalton, you know?
I know.
Me and you are tight. We got this. We're
dumbfounded. So, Dalton, I was going to ask before. So, obviously, you're moving in slightly different circles now to an older generation, such as myself and Johnny. We remember, you know, Dalton, the high jumper. But what would you like your legacy to be, and how would you like to be remembered now, you know, going forward? And
going forward, I mean, for me, just like people to enjoy what they do, love what they do, and compete on the highest level. And I do think the pressures of what happens with the sport and life after sport as well, because it's short-lived and you don't know. And I think when you get yourself to that level, you know, and you miss it, you know. Well, I don't really mean it. I'm okay, you know, with my friends, but when you're in a 100,000 stadium and you're competing on the edge and the crowd's cheering you on and so forth, and some people live for that. So I think I've found something that I love, which is giving people that experience. I don't want to be famous for that. I just like to get someone else to achieve that and make them balance and be able to handle that environment, you know, and compete to the best of their ability and pass it on, you know, in that way. That's for me, really, because I, like I said, you know, it's never been, I think for me as well, to be successful, it was like people always told me I couldn't do that, I'm too short, or, you know, some reason my technique was a certain way, can't. And I always say, why can't I achieve that? Why can't? So I think I was stubborn to success. So I was a person that always went down and got my head down and trained hard. So I just like to give those people those challenges, and you don't know what you could achieve until you try. Don't stop trying.
I hope we use that as part of the show, guys, because that is absolutely gold.
Yeah, gold. Absolutely. Don't worry. It's all there, mate. It's all there. Don't worry. Don't worry, there's going to be no editing tonight, I'll tell you. Brilliant. Well, one more thing before we wrap it up, gents. Johnny, is there something you need to tell us? Because there's something about a motocross boot that I'm not aware of.
Right, my brother is going to obviously publish this tomorrow, right? Because obviously I published something on him and his wife last week. But I was in, and I'm saying this now on a podcast, right? So I'm in the Heathrow Airport this morning, missed my flight last night. And I've got a pair of motocross boots in my bag, which are quite big, right, and quite heavy, so they go right up to the knee. And so the lady said to me, she goes, can you put your bag in the weighing scales? And I went, what? Right? And she said, well, you'd have to check this bag in because it's overweight. And I said, well, I missed my flight last night. It's cost me 80 quid to go on the flight this morning. I can't afford now to check this bag in. And she said, well, you can't bring it on like this. I said, I've got a pair of motocross boots in there. For me to get this bag through, I'm going to have to wear the motocross boots. Is that what you want me to do? And she said to me, what would you like to do, sir? And I went, but I'm telling you, I'd have to wear the motocross boots. And she said, sir, what would you like to... And so I had to put the motocross boots on in Heathrow Airport. I was walking through Heathrow Airport, right? And honestly, there were people shouting out, "Oi, Buzz Lightyear." No, and wow. The group had said, "The stag party is over there, mate." You know,
well, I'll tell you that. If I ever go to Cork, I'll be careful. I'll be watching your shoes, what you're wearing.
Oh, man, honestly. I got to customs in Cork, right? And I seen them laughing, but they let me go through. And as I had gone through, they shouted out, they went, "Sorry, sir, you got to come back." And I was like going, right, okay. And then he's going, "You forgot your motorbike."
Oh, my.
Yeah, you know. So I had to style it out. Like, so I just said, "Listen, lads, I've got a real fear of flying, and I'm just taking every precaution I can." And
you're then, not related to Burkham, are you, by any chance?
No, no. All three of them looked at me and apologised.
Oh, mate, do you know what? You should have just got on an imaginary bike and zoomed off.
Wow. It's been a great day for me today, though. Hey, my Cork, and I remember competing in Gateshead Stadium. That was my best, one of the best places. I love to jump at Gateshead Stadium, you know. I stay in the Swallow. I should go to the Tuxedo. I remember, I don't know if that ship's still up there. No, probably not there now.
The Swallows, it isn't. It was taken down to Middlesbrough, and I think the company that bought it went into liquidation, so it was literally for about 10 years, and then it recently got dismantled. But even the Swallow Hotel's gone now.
Really? What about, is there a club called Sandy's? Is it Sandy's?
Sandy's. Oh,
yeah. Julie's.
Oh, Julie's. That's a Quayside. I used to love Julie's.
Yeah.
That's been gone.
That's it, Sandy, Julie. I knew it was the name of a female, but anyway.
You think
the
Greece?
Julie,
that was the way about 10 years ago. At least 10 years after Julie's closed down.
Oh, look at this, reminiscing. That's cute. Right. That's it for this week, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you, Dalton, for joining us, mate. Really, really appreciate it. Before we let you go,
thank you for having me.
Do you have any form of social media, like an Instagram or a Twitter or even a YouTube channel?
Yeah, well, I'm Dalton at Dalton Grant 237. No, well, at Dalton 237. Sorry, that's my Twitter handle.
Twitter handle. Okay, I'm going to follow you in just a moment. And I think you're on Twitter, Instagram as well.
Yeah, I'm on Instagram as well.
There you go. Superb. Oh, you're following you now. Followed by Marcus Gale, good friend of ours. There you go.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Friend of the show.
There you go. Ben Dinry, Mr. 120K.
Oh, yes, man. That's it. At Ben Dinry. At your service.
Superb.
Looking to develop other social media channels in the very near future.
Absolutely. Johnny.
I would just like to say that Francie McGrine has got the most amount of views ever of any video that we've ever had on our channel at Nottingham Physio. So thank you for all of those who've watched it. And if you haven't watched it, you can head over onto YouTube to Nottingham Physio and you can see the first chapter in a vlog, a skit of the journey of the great Francie McGrine. And if you haven't read the first chapter of Francie McGrine, you can catch that out in the blog section at 108sem.co.uk. So exciting times ahead for my two co-authors here, Stel and Ben. So we're writing sports medicine like you have never seen it before.
That's right. And chapter two is due on the 19th, I want to say.
19th? Yes, it is coming out on the 20th, yeah. 20th. Absolutely, 19th, 20th, yeah.
Fantastic.
So looking forward to that. It's going to be really exciting.
Fantastic. Yeah, likewise, mate. Likewise. It's an absolute honour to be named on that website, mate. I was scrolling through it today, as you probably saw on my Instagram story. I got a bit too excited there, but hey.
You know. Yeah. Why shouldn't? So what you should. That's right.
There you go. You try. You know, it's good to get a little bit of acknowledgement, you know. But, you know, when you've got the, brains here, like Johnny and Ben, you know, can't go wrong.
Yeah.
Can't go wrong. There you go.
We'll have to get you down to Harley Street as well, Dalton.
Definitely. Anything like, because I just started coaching now, so like I say, with things, so anything which is a better alternative that I can send my athletes Tuesday, that's what I want to do. Great, you know, I could wish them that way.
Yeah. Come down and we'll have a chat. Be lovely.
Excellent. Yeah. Brilliant. Definitely.
Thank you.
Friends.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Thank you
once again.
There you go. Thank you,
Dalton. So that's it.
Yeah, you're welcome.
For
thank
this
you
week. Yeah.
Very much appreciated, man. Very much appreciated.
So that's it for this week, ladies and gents. Give us a follow on Twitter at Shoot the Defence. If you like what you've heard, give us a review on iTunes, please. And also, yeah, if you've got any questions, far away, we'll answer best we can. So until next time, adios.